Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. On yesterday's show, June 30th, yesterday, we gave an update in the case where a Colorado firefighter, a member of the Division of Wildlife, after a lifelong addiction to alcohol, depression, committed suicide. And among his belongings, he had left a letter he had written to a former Roman Catholic priest, Father Neil Hewitt. And he describes three occasions of abuse, sexual abuse of a young Stuart when he was 14 years old, when his father had died suddenly of a heart attack. And this priest came along as a father figure to help this child overcome this terrible tragedy in his life and ended up apparently exploiting the young boy. And there are corroborating witnesses, contemporaneous witnesses, other young boys who are now grown, who said that they themselves were not physically molested by Neil Hewitt, but they were on trips with Stuart and themselves, and they remember alcohol, they remember pornography, and they remember Neil Hewitt being in the bathroom most of the night at a Holiday Inn with Stuart, who was drunk. Stuart was drunk. So with that story, now we went over the letter that Stuart had left among his belongings that he handwrote to the priest, Neil Hewitt, the former priest, who lives today in Arvada, Colorado. Although since we first broadcast this story, his house is now up for sale. And you can hear that letter on our website, kgov.com. Yesterday's show, we gave an update with the cousin, Donna Ballantyne, of the victim who eventually committed suicide. Now we want to find out from the national director of a group called Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests, David Clossy. We want to find out what they're doing in this case and about their group generally. But David Clossy, welcome to Bob Enyart Live.
Thanks, Bob. My pleasure. Glad to be here.
David, we are thrilled. We had known about this case for some time, and known that the Catholic Church pretty much was not willing to open up to family members and even let them know if this priest had a history of accusations of abuse and if he was being moved to different dioceses to cover up the trail. But so you guys have gotten involved, and I know that you wrote a letter to the Archdiocese of Denver and the Diocese of Colorado Springs. I was wondering if we could start there, if you can share with us what you wrote and why, and then we want to find out about your organization.
Okay. Well, we basically wrote and said, you know, credible allegations have been made against Father Hewitt, and given the pledges and promises that American bishops have made repeatedly over the last few years about being more open and transparent, we said to the bishops, you know, you owe it to your flock to come clean and say, there are these allegations. If anybody has any information that would either prove or disprove them, you know, now is the time to come forward.
Okay, let me follow that. So in other words, within the Roman Catholic Church, within their own publications, their weekly newspaper, their bulletins, they could put a message in the churches in the four cities, the diocese where this priest served, and said, if you know of any relevant information about this priest, this former priest, please come forward.
Yes, and we think that's the bare minimum that they should do, the bare minimum.
Right.
You know, Christ himself taught us that we are to go out searching for the lost sheep, you know, not passively sitting by waiting for the phone to ring. And in this case, as you mentioned, Hewitt served in four different churches. And surely there's somebody out there who either was victimized by him or witnessed a child being molested by him or has information that would prove just the contrary, that would prove that maybe, you know, all this is some crazy person's vindictive vendetta. frankly, obviously we don't believe that's at all the case. But in other words, when an allegation is made and it's credible, and we certainly think that this one is, mm-hmm. The church has an obligation to aggressively try to find the truth for the sake of everyone involved.
Right.
Instead, both bishops have responded the way bishops have historically responded, which is giving out the minimal information only when forced to, and again, passively sitting back and hoping that this will all just magically go away.
Now, we're involved with this here at Bob and Yurt Live and indirectly Denver Bible Church, because I'm the pastor of that church, and one of our families, we're a small church. We've got about 80 people attending. A Bible church across town planted us a new church just a few years ago. And one of our families, the mom of the family, is the cousin to Stuart, the man who eventually committed suicide. And so that's what brings us into the case and makes it of interest to us, because this family wants to see justice for one of their relatives. And so my advice to the family was this when they first brought this to me: go to the Roman Catholic Church and ask them if they can tell you that this priest had no previous accusations against him and he was not moved in order to cover up a trail of abuse, then you'll have no grievance against the Roman Catholic Church. Then it's only against this individual. So ask them that and let them know. We want to know, are you clear on this? Are you clean on this? And please tell us that much, and they would not.
Right. And that is, you know, that's a very, very reasonable request. Let me hasten to add, though, frankly, that, you know, even if someone is the only accuser or the first accuser, it doesn't necessarily mean right. that church officials didn't have, didn't have, but I think that's a perfectly good starting point. Absolutely.
Well, yeah, and you make a good point, because the church could have known from the beginning, from the first victim, and covered it up. But, we were trying to look at it from a broad brush scope. And if you guys have intentionally covered up the victimization of children, then the organization bears some of the guilt, and we'd like you to confess.
Yes, absolutely.
Right.
In fact, you know, when reporters have said and others have said, well, how do you know Donna and her family are right? How do you know Hewitt is guilty? We've made it a point in SNAP to repeatedly say, well, we don't know for certain. We weren't there. But there are 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 facts that would lead us to believe that he's guilty. And one of those is what you just pointed out. Church officials have had multiple opportunities. They've had more than 2 years to respond and say, this is the first allegation against Father Hewitt. Or, we've scoured his records, and we find no impropriety alleged in there at all.
Mm-hmm.
And they have not done that. Hewitt himself has had more than 2 years to, you know, stand up before the cameras or correspond with people privately or have his lawyer correspond with people and say, you know, this simply didn't happen. Here's what the truth is.
In fact, David Clossy, again, you're the national director of SNAP, Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests. We actually have the cousin here in studio, Donna Ballantyne. Donna, I'd like to ask you a question. Isn't it true that after your cousin's suicide, that a relative called Neil Hewitt, the former Roman Catholic priest, and confronted him on the telephone? Could you tell us about that?
That is absolutely correct. A real close relative to the situation called him and said, I'm reading this letter. Tell me if this is true. And he said,
Neil Hewitt said,
send me the letter and I'll call you back, which the person did send him the letter. He did call him back and said, it's true. I did. So then this other person said, well, I'd like to meet with you face to face. So, you know, I can hear it from you personally.
Right.
To which he agreed. They set up a meeting at a white spot in Denver. That would be like 4 days from then. 2 days later.
A restaurant.
Right. Okay. 2 days later, Hewitt called him and said, I can't make it. So and that was the end of that.
So he backed out. And so not only do we have contemporaneous witnesses of other young boys, preteen, young teenage boys, saying he took us on trips, he brought alcohol, he exposed us to pornography, He wanted to go skinny dipping with us in Reservoir. He went, and he was all practically all night in the bathroom with your cousin Stuart, with Stuart drunk in there, crying out, screaming at one point. So all that. And then we have a relative who says that Neil Hewitt confessed to him.
Right.
So these are all pieces of corroborating evidence. And what is it, David Clossy, with SNAP, what is the law? If the Catholic Church hears an accusation that may have merit, what are they supposed to do by law and by their own policy?
By their own policy, they're supposed to immediately suspend the cleric and launch a more full investigation. And in the interim, that cleric's not supposed to wear clerical garb or present himself as a priest mm-hmm. in any way, shape, or form. Now, we think that policy is woefully inadequate, that, in fact, they should go way beyond that, and they should aggressively reach out to victims, and they should publicly say an accusation's been made if you have any information that would lead to the truth or falsity of it.
Absolutely.
You've got a duty to come forward, not just to us, but to law enforcement, because, let's face it, this is criminal behavior. And one reason the church has gotten into so much trouble is because they've insisted on trying to handle this in-house instead of telling victims and witnesses to go directly to the independent professionals in law enforcement.
Now, the two articles in the Rocky Mountain News, I'm trying to scan them real quick to find the quote, but Kevin Vaughn implies in here that they're also they're supposed to report to the local authorities. Do you know about that?
Yes. The church leaders have repeatedly pledged since early 2002 that they will report all allegations to the criminal and civil authorities. In some states, they're required to do that, but they've said even if they're not required by law, that's going to be their official church policy. And, of course, that's the only thing that makes sense because, a bishop who is trained in church history and theology and all the rest doesn't necessarily have the skills, much less the independence and the objectivity, to investigate, horrific sex crimes. That's just not what a bishop is trained to do.
Here's the article in the Rocky Mountain News by Kevin Vaughn, and he's quoting an official of the Archdiocese and saying he would not comment on whether Archdiocese officials found the allegations credible, which would have triggered a report to law enforcement authorities. He also would not discuss whether the Archdiocese has any records from the priest's time of service that would shed any light on the veracity of the allegations. We're not, he quotes this official, we're not going to comment on what's in personnel records. In cases where the organization is partly culpable or they're covering up for a child sex offender, that's despicable.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, there is no question that grown-ups have privacy rights. We all know that. We all agree with that. We all value that. But we also know that children have the right to be safe, and that right always trumps the presumed privacy rights, frankly, especially of an ex-employee. Mm. We find that that's just a wrong-headed idea, that somehow Neil Hewitt's personnel file is totally, totally off-limits, even if it might mean the kids to his next-door neighbors that he babysits for or the students down the street at a school that he might tutor at.
He might be coaching kids.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
And frankly, if Neil Hewitt has nothing to hide, then he ought to be the first to come out and say, here's my personnel file. You'll notice there's nothing in here.
Mm-hmm.
That wouldn't necessarily indicate that he didn't abuse Stuart.
No, but
that would certainly be, a step in his defense.
It would be added information that would be appreciated by everybody involved.
Exactly. Exactly.
All right. So could you tell us a bit about SNAP, the Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests? You're in St. Louis, Missouri?
I live in St. Louis, Missouri, but our organization is based in Chicago. We've been around for about 14 years. We have about 4,800 members across the country, organized into 56 local support groups, where people who are traumatized by clergy have a chance to come and be supported and listened to and get compassion and occasionally some advice. Our whole mission is very simple. First of all, Bob, we want to help those who have been assaulted by clergy and are coping with the after effects. We want those people to be healed. We want them to be able to piece their lives together and move on. And secondly, we want to do everything we can in our power to prevent future abuse. And that's why we're so concerned about the Hewitt case, because as you pointed out, he's walking the streets. Very few people know anything about these allegations. And, you know, God forbid that, last night, you know, he took four kids to the movies and may have molested one of them.
Right. And Donna Ballantyne, she repeatedly attempted to contact Neil Hewitt, sent him a letter, certified email, and gave him the opportunity to answer questions and to be contrite, to be sorry and truthful and repent. And he refused to answer. And so he said, well, here's what I'm going to do next. And on yesterday's program, she listed the five things, and she's pretty much three-fifths of the way through the list. And the next thing on the list is to send a letter to all his neighbors in the local Pomona High School saying there's a suspected child molester in your neighborhood. And so and with that letter, most likely we're either going to send a copy of Stewart's own letter, heavily edited so the sexual vulgarity is not in there, send that along with the letter to let people know here is some of the evidence against your neighbor.
And we applaud Donna for everything she's done in this regard. You know, the most tempting thing to do in the face of an overwhelming, depressing, confusing situation is to walk away. Mm-hmm. And we've all done that. Mm-hmm. Especially something as horrible as childhood sexual abuse. Mm. But we really applaud her and her family for having the courage and the persistence and the tenacity to try to expose the truth here.
You guys had a convention here in Denver, and I know that you met with Donna, I believe, and her husband, Mark. And we were in Denver Bible Church. We went to Turkey for 3 weeks. We were on a Bible tour of Turkey and how that cities, ancient cities in Turkey, had so much to do with the stories of the Bible. And when we got back, I was thrilled to read Mark Ballantyne, Donna's husband's, comments in the Rocky Mountain News when Neil Hewitt's wife said that they threatened to sue the Ballantynes, of all things. And Mark's immediate response was, he said, well, that would be great, because then we'd be able to get closer to the truth, find out what really happened.
Yeah, and I think that comment says an awful lot about the Ballantyne family and their motivations. I mean, they're showing terrific, terrific courage. And, of course, if guilty of any kind of misconduct, the easiest thing in the world is to shoot the messenger and to somehow, you know, attack them or attack their credibility. And yet anybody who knows Mark and Donna know that they have absolutely the highest and most noble motivations here. And again, we applaud them and anyone who's trying to shed the light of truth on this horrible situation.
I actually like to read the short section of this Rocky Mountain News article written by Kevin Vaughn. He's speaking of the wife, and the wife's name, Donna, I don't see it immediately in the article.
It's not there.
Okay, it's Mrs. Neil Hewitt.
Mrs. Neil Hewitt.
Mrs. Neil Hewitt said earlier that she believed her husband was being harassed. She also said she and her husband had consulted an attorney and were considering whether to sue the Ballantynes. The Ballantynes, who agreed to be identified for this story, said they sympathized with the pain the charges had brought her. We totally understand her doing this, Mark Ballantyne said. She loves this man. Donna and I deeply regret her suffering. Unfortunately, this is one of those situations in life where other innocent people are going to suffer. We feel we must seek the truth. He also said that in a way, he would welcome a lawsuit from the former priest and his wife. Quote, it actually might be the best thing, he said. It might be the best way, the quickest way, to get to the bottom of the whole sordid affair. Donna, your husband, he's a hero of mine.
He has been so supportive through this whole thing.
He's just great. Okay, so David Clossy, you're the national director of SNAP. What brought you into this?
Well, I was contacted by Donna and you know, looked into the situation.
No, I mean the network.
Oh, I see. I'm sorry. I was like virtually all of our members. I was abused as a child by a priest for a period of 4 years here in Missouri. As a matter of fact, he, like so many of these cases, he took me on out of town trips, camping and canoeing. In fact, took me to Colorado and abused me several times there. Uh-huh. And I realized that you know, I could benefit from talking to other people who are facing the same struggles, the same after effects that I was facing and still do face. Mm-hmm. And it's been incredibly healing for me, healing for me. And like Donna, I realize I can't undo the past, but what I can do is I can take some steps to protect kids in the future. And for me, that's a critical part of my recovery.
There's, David, just to let you know a bit about me, I grew up Catholic, 8 years in a Catholic grammar school in New Jersey, St. Anthony's Catholic School and Church. And I certainly was never molested by a priest, but I was an altar boy for a few years and read the reading at the Mass that the lector read. I was reading that reading as a young kid. And we had maybe 1,000 people or so in each Mass. But one thing I remember, and I'm not, I move in circles. We're a fundamentalist Bible church. And so there's a number of people in my circles who are harshly anti-Catholic. And because some of them have stories of the pain and suffering that the Catholic Church has brought on them. And I don't share that hostility. I view Catholics similar to mainstream, mainline Protestant denominations that have brought shame to the gospel of Jesus Christ. And so at any rate, I'm sort of neutral thinking about the Catholic Church in a lot of ways. But we had in our Catholic grammar school, we had a religion class. And a teacher, Father Stepien, he'd come in and teach us about religion. And that lasted a few months until he would fly into rages and cuss us out, vulgar profanity. And I think we were in fourth or fifth grade. And he had no control of the class. Admittedly, we were all brats. But ADD, that's adult discipline disorder. They didn't know how to discipline us. They were, in my perspective, a bunch of liberals, and they were turning us into a bunch of brats. And so he would literally use vulgarity and cuss us out, and eventually he remained a priest, but he got fired from being a teacher.
Wow.
So that was my experience. There was a lot of dysfunctionality, and I personally think celibacy, where the Apostle Paul wrote that qualifications in the New Testament to be a bishop or an elder of the church is to be the husband of one wife. And so somewhere along the line, even Peter was married. Jesus healed Peter's mother-in-law. Paul, on a especially cranky day, he complained that Peter and the other apostles travel with their wives. And Paul said, I'm always stuck with Barnabas. And so somewhere along the line, when they decided, well, to be a minister, you have to be celibate. I think that's what invited a lot of this pain and suffering.
Well, I think you're right, certainly. And I think people overlook one of the real disadvantages, if you will, to celibacy. And that is that in a system where absolutely no one can have sex of any sort, then many, many people will have a secret. Maybe it's masturbation, you know. Maybe it's pornography. Maybe it's affairs with adult parishioners. But in that situation, then very few priests are going to be willing to rat on or tell on or turn in one of their brother priests
because they all have secrets.
Exactly. It's akin to the problem, you know, with police misconduct, where there's this intense inner group loyalty. Only, frankly, it's compounded. Even police officers know two things. Number one, they generally have a spouse they can go to and turn to for support and help if they alienate all their brother and sister police officers.
Right.
And number two, if the heat gets too much, they can pick up and move across the country and get a job in another police force. And priests have neither of those options.
Yeah.
The priests are trapped. They've sworn loyalty to one bishop in one diocese. And secondly, they know that if they alienate their brother priests or the bishop, you know, they don't even have a partner or the possibility of a partner they can turn to for support. So that, in that sense, celibacy does really contribute, to the overall problem by fostering this secrecy that's been so prevalent.
And then certainly traditional morality, as far as Judeo-Christian morality, has held that homosexuality was immoral. And apparently, a systemic decision made at Catholic seminaries throughout North America was that they would admit homosexuals as long as they would also take a vow of celibacy. And that apparently has come back to bite them. in that these molestation cases, the vast majority appeared to be men molesting boys.
I'm glad you brought that up. I think it is important to stress that that's the appearance. We don't, you know, there's been very little scientific data on this. In our organization, it's roughly half and half, half women and half men. And we want to always stress that just because Jerry Springer may find male-on-male sex more salacious, you know, we never want to minimize the suffering of girls who are victimized as
absolutely
well.
Not. In fact, I've seen you could go to a refereed scientific journal called Psychology Reports, and there was pretty extensive research on children molested. And I think nationwide, not looking at priests, but generally, two-thirds of the children sexually molested are girls, one-third boys. But of those boys, 90% of them were molested by men.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that sounds pretty much in line with the research, mm-hmm. the research that I've seen. And I do think that there are a lot of sexually troubled, but genuinely religiously oriented, even spiritual young men mm-hmm. who feel bizarre sexual urges, and they're scared to death. Mm-hmm. And they're drawn to the priesthood because they believe that if they promise God that they will serve his church,
that will keep them pure.
Exactly. That
right.
God will sort of reciprocate then and help them sublimate these terrible urges that they feel. So yeah. I don't think they go into the priesthood necessarily, Bob, thinking...
to molest kids.
Yeah, exactly.
Right,
but
right.
rather thinking, this is going to help me suppress these terrible desires
yeah,
that I feel.
That could be where I'm more suspicious of somebody who becomes a Boy Scout leader and is going to take... who's a practicing homosexual, going to take boys on camping trips. But, yeah, a young person going into the ministry thinking this is going to help him, where the Apostle Paul writes to the Corinthians, he writes, it's better to marry than to burn. So if you have these desires, it's like being hungry and telling yourself you can't eat.
Right.
And you have
right.
these desires, and the Apostle Paul says, hey, marriage is a good thing. It's a blessing that God gave us. Adam was incomplete without Eve.
Right.
And to... okay, so we're about out of time, but David Clossy, when you get back to Colorado, or if you do more with this case of Stewart and his molestation, we'd like to perhaps have you back on and keep track of this story.
I would be honored to. I'd be honored to be on. And let me, before we go, mention our website, which is
yeah.
snapnetwork.org, S-N-A-P, snapnetwork.org.
Okay, that sounds great. We encourage our listeners to check out the website. And thanks so much, Dave Clossy. We appreciate having you.
Thank you, Bob.
God bless you. And then, Donna, thank you for being here for two days in a row shows.
Thank you, Bob.
We appreciate you and your work not to keep this under the carpet.
Thank you.
All right. God bless you. And then we're about out of time. I want to tell you about our catalog. We've got so many neat Bible materials, witnessing materials, here at Bob and Yart Live. You could call us at 800-8-N-YART and say, hey, I want a catalog, mail me one. And if we don't answer the phone, leave your name and address. We'll send one out to you. You could check it out on the web right now. If you're at a computer, kgov.com. You can see all our Bible study materials, videos, audio tapes, albums on teaching through the Bible, witnessing to unbelievers, debates with homosexuals, atheist, evolutionist. It's a lot of fun. You could help keep us on the air, and you could enjoy and learn yourself, and you could come on out to Denver Bible Church this Sunday. This is Bob Enyart reminding you to do right and risk the consequence.